but that's the old me.
Shouting out, I'm out window thrown down, 'cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live on Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you're listening to the podcast version of this show, which is available anywhere you get your podcasts to listen to anytime you want to, anywhere you want to. No matter how you're listening, we're just glad you are listening, and we hope to make your day even a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. My co-host Jeremy Branch is on the line with me. Jeremy, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Julio. As we get closer to the end of April, we're getting that much closer to WrestleMania 42.
42? Seriously?
Isn't that crazy?
Wait, so do they do these annually, or?
They do, yeah.
But so, it can't always have been annually, because, like, has it always been annually? Like, there's no way there's been 42 WrestleManias in 42 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's as far as I know, and I'm not a 42-year-long fan, but yeah, I think they've run consistently
that
first one.
But, like, I'm old enough to remember WrestleMania 1. But so it doesn't, there's no way it was 42 years ago.
It was, like, 84, 94, 04, 14, 23. Yeah, man. 42 years ago.
Really?
How do you feel?
How do I feel right now? About 974 years old.
So I know that you're not a big fan of wrestling, but as somebody who grew up in the era that you did, I'm sure you had at least a familiarity with figures like Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and all of that stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that first year it was the tag team of Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. versus Rowdy Piper and God, who was Piper's partner? Was it the Iron Sheik?
I don't know. That sounds likely, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember who. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the golden age of wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, like that like the Cyndi Lauper connection, rock and wrestling era, which I mean, I do have some fondness for. It's really funny that when you go back and look at the actual people involved in it at that time, that most of the heels were the actual real good human beings, and most of the faces were just dirtbags. I don't want to talk ill about the dead, but Hulk Hogan was not a good person in real life.
And yeah, it turns out he was pretty rotten.
And meanwhile, Rowdy Piper, possibly the greatest heel in the entire history of wrestling, may have been one of the greatest human beings that has ever stepped into a ring.
I didn't know that. That's cool. When you think about these iconic wrestlers from that era and kind of the impact that they had outside of the world of wrestling, fast forward up to where we're at now, John Cena would probably be the equivalent, right?
I mean, I think Cena and Dwayne Johnson and, to a slightly lesser extent, Dave Bautista are in a different class than anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, nobody...
I don't mean their behavior outside the ring. I'm just talking about stature of celebrity.
No, I'm talking about stature of celebrity here. I think that they are in a higher echelon than anybody else that has ever been a professional wrestler. I think even more so than Hulk Hogan. Like, Hulk Hogan went and did a lot of movies, and he had a very well-known persona, but his persona was always Hulk Hogan. You never saw Hulk Hogan become another character. Even when he was playing a character in a movie, he was still playing Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Cena and Bautista and Johnson are legitimate actors. You may want to quibble about the level of their skill, but they are legitimate actors, and I think that combined with their public personas takes them to a different level. That is a level higher than anybody prior to them, higher than Hogan. Hogan is probably the gold standard before them in terms of, you know, mainstream recognition and attendance and, you know, hoopla. Piper's in there. You could maybe put Stone Cold in there. You could maybe put, you know, a couple others that, you know, maybe Triple H, you know, a few others that have gone on to do movies and do on, you know, other things. But none of them have ever stepped away and made an entire other career.
That's actually a really valid observation that I haven't really thought about in those terms, but it's really interesting to think that John Cena, who has kind of transcended WWE wrestling and actually had his retirement run, was actually just now brought on to host WrestleMania 42. And I believe it was in hopes that they would move tickets, because day and date, they're down about 20% of total ticket sales than they had last year. It is in Las Vegas again. I'm so happy and excited. I'm going to actually be attending Sunday night, so that's going to be really cool. But I was wondering, Julio, do you think doing the same venue 2 years has stifled the excitement in some way? Is there things going on outside of the world of wrestling that would impact it? What do you think is the reason outside of the product?
I think Cena was the last superstar they had, and losing him is what hurts them more than anything. And trying to bring him back as a host is kind of smacks of desperation. I kind of wish for Cena's sake that he wasn't doing that, but like, I get that he feels a loyalty to it.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, the same as Dwayne Johnson feels a loyalty to it. You know, there's that familial connection that he has with his dad having been a wrestler and everything. And I believe he's got some cousins and whatnot that have been, yeah. So like, I get why they don't, unlike, you know, and this is where I'll put Dave Bautista in a different category. Like, Dave Bautista walked away and he walked away.
Yes.
You know, Bautista is an actor now, and that's it. You don't see Bautista getting back in the ring. You don't see him showing up to MC. You don't see him making a backstage appearance on Raw or whatever. You know, he's like, nope, done. You guys have fun. You know, no disrespect, but I'm over here doing my thing.
Are people buying tickets because Cena is hosting?
Maybe. I mean, you know, I've seen Cena at conventions and seen the crowd he draws at them. So, you know, the man draws a crowd wherever he goes.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I think the product does play a factor. I think the redundancy of using the same venue plays a factor. And I also think just tourism in general is down a little bit because a lot of things have gotten more expensive.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's obviously a factor too. You know, you can't discount that. But generally speaking, with a big event like that, it shouldn't have as massive an impact. You know, the economy, it's going to hurt everything, but there's so much demand for a massive event like that to me does not jump out as enough of a reason to bring it down that much.
Yeah.
Like, if you told me it was down, if you were telling me it was down 5% because of the economy, yeah, I'd buy that. I don't know that I buy that it's down 25% of the economy. I think that it's that the average person who is more of a casual fan is going to have a hard time naming 3 current WWE superstars.
Yeah, I think that's valid. We do have Roman Reigns and CM Punk that are fighting.
Yeah.
But to your point, neither of them have really crossed over that threshold into the mainstream.
Yeah, and I mean, dude, again, I'm kind of peripherally in that world, and I can name the two of them and Cody Rhodes, and then I'm pretty close to tapped out.
Yeah. Valid.
You know, like, I can probably, like, if I rack my brain, I know Danhausen just moved over from AEW, so I know he's over there, but I wouldn't say he's at the superstar level in WWE. And I know of a few other people that, you know, a few of the female wrestlers and whatnot, but, you know, Charlotte Flair and some of the others, but like, I'm maxed at that point. Like,
yeah.
And I don't think that, you know, there are enough household name wrestlers right now to drive the sales. And, you know,
they were so hot there from 39 to 40. And then it's kind of been cooling a little bit since then. Yeah. And I think the product has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
sun just went behind the clouds. There's darkness all around me now, and I've just destroyed the world I'm living in. I broke her heart so many times, and now at last I've broken mine, and I've just destroyed the world I'm living in. What made me think that I could go on hurting her? I had to know there had to be an end. But fools in love are taught by fate. We never learn till it's too late. And I've just destroyed the world I'm living in.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me. And Jeremy, we're going to get into talking about second season of a series that we're both enjoying, and that is Monarch, Legacy of Monsters on Apple TV+. I say we're both enjoying. I'm assuming you're enjoying it.
Yeah, so far so good. We're about 5 episodes in. A new one recently dropped, but neither of us have had a chance to watch the most recent episode.
Yeah, the show drops new episodes on Fridays, and we record on Fridays, so it's a little hard for us to talk about it. When we record on Friday morning and they drop on Friday morning. I'm sure we will eventually, at the end of the season, catch up again, but. I kind of wanted to take stock a little bit at the midway point, or maybe a little past midway. Are they doing 8 episodes? Do you know?
I think they did 10 the first season, so maybe we'll get 10 more.
Yeah, okay. So that would be a lot for a streaming show, because 8 seems to be the norm these days.
It does, and yeah.
Well, I think the one of the main reasons I wanted for us to talk about this, and I think is one of the main reasons a lot of people have been paying attention to this locally here in the Pensacola area, and that is that the series, at least part of the series, takes place in Pensacola.
Yeah, that was a big surprise to start an episode of one of these prestige Apple Plus shows and see a Pensacola, Florida title come across the screen.
Now,
those of you that have watched the MonsterVerse movies, you may remember that King of the Monsters actually featured some iteration of Pensacola, but Julio and I both kind of joked about how that is clearly not Pensacola. So this was a little different this time, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is not the first time that Pensacola has figured into the MonsterVerse. And that is because they've established that this company, Apex Technologies, that is kind of a central MacGuffin, I guess, for lack of a better term, in the franchise, is based in Pensacola. Yeah, the version of Pensacola that we saw in King of the Monsters was laughable. They didn't even bother with, getting an establishing shot from the local area. It's very clearly Hawaii. And then, of course, all the action that takes place actually in Pensacola, where they, make a big run down to Chinatown to talk to somebody in Chinatown. We don't even have decent Chinese food in Pensacola, much less a Chinatown.
This was no Atlantic Rim, in other words.
Yeah, Atlantic Rim was the opposite. The Atlantic Rim was pretending it didn't take place in Pensacola while clearly filming in Pensacola. So, you jumble the two of them up somehow and you maybe get it kind of right. Yeah, so we... Again, since we're visiting Apex Technologies quite a bit in this series, and this is, of course, I should be clear, a prequel to that movie. This entire series takes place before that movie takes place.
And Apex is kind of the rival corporation to Monarch. Monarch supposedly...
Well, Monarch's a government agency. Yeah, Monarch's a government agency, too, versus Apex being a private industry.
Right. And so what we're seeing in this series is kind of leading up to something that happens in Godzilla versus Kong, and that's the creation of Mechagodzilla. But yeah, Julio, you, like you said, it prominently features Pensacola in a couple of episodes.
Yeah. Now, so we do get this establishing shot with the title coming up saying Pensacola, Florida, and it is a shot of the Pensacola coastline. I mean,
did you see your office in the clip?
I was kind of looking out for it. Like, it was kind of hard. Like, I actually spent some time like with the screen paused, but I was watching it on my phone, so I couldn't see it that big, trying to pick out highlights. And it's like, okay, I see the Grand, I see, you know, the SCI building. I didn't quite see the building I work in. I have an office in Seville Tower. Most people locally know, you know, it's one of the tallest buildings in Pensacola. Mm-hmm. What I was surprised by was that I could see the Grand, but I couldn't see the Bay Center.
No.
Which usually you're able to see from, you know, when you're coming across the bridge. So I thought I saw the Fish House, but I didn't see the sign. But that would also make sense because we're in what, 2015 in this series?
Uh-huh.
2015, 2016, 2017, somewhere in there. And if they actually went to get an accurate photo for or video from that year, that big lit Fish House sign that's right on the coast was not there yet. So
now that's interesting. I figured they must have run down here and got a shot. But it also could be like some sort of stock library that they just got access to.
Yeah, I mean, if they did, good on them, because that's an attention to detail that only a local would notice.
And why would they care about that if they didn't care at all in King of the Monsters?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I do have, you know, it's worth mentioning that one of the stars of this series is Kiersey Clemons, who is from Pensacola. So it could be that she mentioned to them, hey, you know, you guys looked really dumb when you went to Chinatown. There's no Chinatown in Pensacola. I don't know how, you know, when the last time she's visited here is, or, you know, she doesn't live here anymore or anything. But I mean, that could certainly be a factor. I always thought the joke I always like to make about King of the Monsters is they run down to the non-existent Chinatown. And they go there to talk to this informant, and the informant is played by the one person who was in that movie that I knew for a fact had actually been in Pensacola before. It was Ronnie Chang, who I knew had been here to film a Daily Show segment because he happened to film it in my office. I used to share space with a company that worked on underwater drones, and he came to do a story about that. And so he spent an entire day in my office. So yeah, I've actually met Ronnie Chang, nice guy. But I thought it was hilarious because he was the one person that was involved with the movie that I knew at least had been in Pensacola.
So whatever notes he had for the production, they obviously weren't taken into consideration.
Well, you
I'm
know,
sure to most people, it wouldn't matter.
I got to assume he wasn't here long. Like, I got to assume he flew in, did the piece, flew out. Maybe he was here overnight at best. You know, I don't expect him to intimately know whether there's a Chinatown or anything like that. But I just thought it was ironic.
No way that Kiersey Clemons was cast because she's from Pensacola.
Oh, no,
I
no,
think
no.
That goes without saying. But it is kind of interesting that there's a connection. And I like to think that your theory is correct, because when you mentioned that to me, that, oh, yeah, Kiersey Clemons is from Pensacola, I immediately created the headcanon that, like, she must have been like, hey, you guys, you know that King of the Monsters is set in Pensacola, but if we're going to do Pensacola again, we should probably do it correctly.
But here's my question. Did they? Because, yeah, they did. They did go through the trouble of getting a correct establishing shot, and I really do appreciate that. It means a lot. But every other scene that's set in Pensacola, I mean, there's some that are in the office building. It's an office building. That's fine. But like the stuff that's outdoors or the neighborhoody stuff, none of it looks like Pensacola.
Yeah, fine by me. They Scream 6 was set in New York but shot in Canada.
They could
establishing shot.
They could have found like at least the name of a real motel that is here rather than the later Gator Motel. which does sound like a great Florida name, but it really sounds like a South Florida name. It does not sound like a Pensacola name. Like, you know, just how long a Google search would it take to find a cheap motel in Pensacola?
Oh, there's plenty of them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of those ones over on Mobile Highway or something would be, you know, would make a lot of sense because they're trying to stay in a cheap hotel. They're trying to stay under the radar. And then the thing that really killed me you know, they've got the Apex Technologies headquarters, and you know, they're going in there to try to get some technology out of there that was stolen from them, and they find that they're storing a bunch of kaiju there on property in the sub basement.
I don't see any problem with
now,
that.
Okay. There are certainly buildings in Pensacola that have basements. There's not a lot of them. There's not a lot of them, but like you can think of the old Sacred Heart Hospital, you know, Ozone is in the basement of that property. You know, I'm sure there's a few houses that have them. There's a few businesses, you know, you go on, there's obviously a network of tunnels under Palafox Street that they're working on right now that's, you know, necessitated all this reconstruction that's going on there now. So I can buy a basement, barely.
Sub-basement is where you draw the line,
A sub-basement is a basement below the basement. It's two floors down. You know what we call that in Pensacola? Underwater.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
Couldn't they, like, obviously, to your point about Sacred Heart, they don't call it East Hill for nothing. It is literally on a hill, so it makes sense it would have a basement. But
yeah.
You can't, like, make some sort of structure out of, like, I don't know, reinforced steel or something like, put it in the ground?
Theoretically, yes. But it's one of those things that, like, and I realize that people that don't live here don't know, but, like, if you do live here, it kind of messes with your suspension of disbelief. You know,
that's,
it's like
the thing.
And
it's a 300-foot kaiju.
Again, it's something that, you know, Google how far above sea level Pensacola is.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. You know, does it make sense for there to be a sub basement, or would there just be another building that they're keeping them in? That's because you don't see the exterior of the building anyway. So, you know, who cares?
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess, you know, the idea that they're subterranean, maybe just as appealing to them as script writers. But at the halfway point, are you enjoying this series? Because I remember when we were talking about Mandalorian and Grogu, people's critique is that it looked like a TV show. This show is just premium as far as special effects, similar to you know, what they're doing on Mandalorian. Do you feel like it's capturing the epic scope and that it feels like suitably grand for the kaijus?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll answer that question when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You're a monster. I can swallow a bottle of all in a, feel like Godzilla. Better hit the deck like a cartilla. My whole squad's in here walking around the party, a cross between a zombie apocalypse and Bobby the Brain Heenan, which is probably the same reason I wrestle with Mania Shades and his dumb posse. Consider it to cost me a costly mistake if they sleeping on me. Better get insomnia, ADHD, hydroxycut, test the capacity. In AA with an AK, melee, finna set it like a play date. Better vacate, retreat like a vacay, mayday. This beat is cray cray, Ray J, H-A-H-A-H-A. Laughing all the way to the bank, I spray flames. They cannot tame or placate the
monster. You get in my way, I'ma feed you to the
monster.
I'm normal during the day, but at night turn to a
monster.
When the moon shines like ice road truckers, I look like a villain out of those blockbusters.
Got to the fire, spit a monster.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us, and we are talking about the second season of Monarch Legacy of Monsters on Apple TV+. This is the series based in the legendary Monsterverse. This is the current Godzilla versus Kong universe. It's separate from... This is another thing maybe people don't get, is that, like, this is a separate universe from any of the other Godzilla or Kong projects that you might see out there. So, like, like Godzilla Minus One, we're going to get a Godzilla Minus Zero this year, which I'm really looking forward to. Yeah, those are not part of this universe. And so there's a lot of different versions floating around out there, but this is, you know, this is the, I guess, for lack of a better term, the American Godzilla and Kong universe.
And it is a Godzilla and Kong show, and the title doesn't use Godzilla or Kong in it. But before we went to the break, I'm just kind of curious to get your temp on this to this point. What do you think about the show?
I continue to enjoy it. You know, I think you're on the nose with the fact that the effects look fantastic. Like, obviously, yeah, you're not watching it on a big screen, so you do lose that some of that impact. And I'm guilty of watching a lot of it on my phone. So, you know, which means that you're really not getting the full impact. But I feel like if you're watching it on a decent sized screen TV, it's not going to look any different than streaming one of the MonsterVerse movies. I think the effects are up to that same level. The kaiju look great. The effects look seamless. In that regard, I have no issues. I think.
What do you think about our characters?
I generally like the characters. I'm wondering if there is not a revelation pending. I guess this gets into spoiler territories. I mean, we've already had the revelation that, for those who haven't watched the series, it kind of takes place in two time periods. We see stuff that happened back in the 50s and 60s that leads up to the events of Skull Island. And then we see stuff that takes place in the mid 20 teens that takes place after the first Godzilla movie, the Godzilla 2014, but before the Godzilla King of the Monsters, Godzilla versus Kong, et cetera, before all of those movies. So it plays on a lot of stuff that happened other places. It plays on stuff that leads into Kong Skull Island. And one of the central characters in the past time period is Bill Randa, who was a character in Godzilla or in Kong Skull Island, played in that film by John Goodman. And he's played in the series by Anders Holm. Obviously, there is some serious weight gain that happens in the interim. So we're following him. We're following the younger version of Lee Shaw. And one of the things that I think is brilliant about this series is they've cast Wyatt Russell and Kurt Russell both to play Lee Shaw, Wyatt Russell playing him in the past period and Kurt Russell playing him in the current period.
Really cool.
And they do such a great job of synthesizing the role. And I would love to talk to either one of them and ask them how much of this is you two coming together and deciding on a performance and how much of it is you imitating the other one.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Cause I'm curious about that. I had just been thinking about, cause I've seen Wyatt Russell at a few shows now. And I was just thinking about, man, if I got the chance to moderate a panel with Wyatt Russell, that would be one of the first things I'd ask him about is that performance and where it's coming from, because it's seamless. Like if you didn't know, you'd think they were using de-aging techniques or something. He's really good. And then of course there's a love triangle between the two of them and the doctor character, what is her name again? Is her name Kate as well?
No, our daughter's name's Kate.
The granddaughter.
Yeah. And I don't know what her name is right now.
But she is married to one of them, has an affair with the other. She loves them both. It's a whole thing. So I wonder if there's not a revelation coming that the other character's name has just gone out of my head. The one that's the father of the two children.
Her name is Kiko.
Kiko.
And his name is...
It's an M name.
Because
the kids are Kate and Kentaro.
Yeah. I don't even see him on the cast list.
Not a good sign that I'm not remembering the names.
Hiroshi.
Yes, Hiroshi. Thank you. It's not an M name. I'm wrong. I wonder if there's not a revelation that Hiroshi... Oh, no, because Hiroshi was Bill's stepson, too, wasn't he? Like, she had had Bill before... She had had Hiroshi before she met Bill.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would eliminate where I was going with this, which I was thinking that perhaps that there was going to be a revelation that Shaw was actually the father.
Oh, that would be wild. I guess they could probably still do that because it does seem like the two of them had a relationship prior to when she met Bill.
But she had Hiroshi before she met Bill, didn't she?
Oh, I don't know.
Wasn't there something about she'd been previously married and the husband passed away?
Yes.
Yeah. So that didn't go where I thought it was going to go. I mean, Shaw has certainly been a father or grandfather figure to these characters, but it's not going to be a biological thing.
Yeah. I feel like I really loved what they did with Gareth Edwards' 2014 Godzilla, and I really loved what they did with season one of Monarch, but I feel like the MonsterVerse overall has been pretty hit or miss outside of the actual effects and the realization of the characters, which, like, Godzilla and Kong look awesome.
I agree. I mean,
I struggle with.
But, you know, that being said, I would say this is still better than any of the films.
I agree. Yeah.
This is a more involving story. It is a more, there are characters that you can care about in this, which I'm hard pressed to care about any of the characters in any of the MonsterVerse films.
Yeah.
Like, tell me who I'm supposed to care about in this. I guess you care about Kaylee Hoddle's character, the little deaf girl.
That's what I was about to say. Maybe the little deaf girl.
Like, do you care about Millie Bobby Brown?
No.
Do you care about Kyle Chandler? Do you care about, you know? Like,
yeah,
again,
I guess that's one of the advantages of the television storytelling medium. However, the drawback of it is that the grandeur and the spectacle is lost on a smaller screen without the amazing sound. So it's like, if they were to make the perfect version of this, it would be Monarch on the big screen.
But you can't do the kind of storytelling on the big screen that you can do on the small screen. There's not enough time in a 2-hour movie to do what they do in an 8 to 10 hour series.
And there's no way people are going to go to the theater to watch Monarch Legacy of Monsters when it's not even number one on Apple Plus as far as shows that people are streaming.
Yeah, unfortunately, the days of the movie serial are dead.
Yeah.
And the closest thing we have to that is like the MCU.
100%.
And you're not getting a new, it's not like in the serial days where, you know, they filmed it all at once and then you got a new chapter released every week. It's, you know. That stuff predates
Apple
television.
Has to know that they're losing millions of dollars on this show. Do you think they continue forward with it, or is this going to be the end?
Apple TV exists to keep Apple users in the Apple atmosphere.
Sure.
That's the only reason it exists. They do not need to make money on anything on Apple TV as long as they have their users still buying iPhones and iPads and MacBooks.
So it's a loss leader, but when you look at things like Shrinking and Ted Lasso, which are other kind of flagships of the platform, and think about the production budget versus something like this, it's like, I'm so stoked that we have it, and I love it, but you and I have both kind of noticed that it doesn't seem to be capturing the fandom and the content creator space in the same way that other stuff is.
I am hard-pressed to believe that there is any show on Apple TV that is making money with the possible exception of Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
And Ted Lasso only because it has become such a breakaway hit that there is so much other merchandise for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it may be making money off the merchandise. But the flip side of that is, much like Monarch, Apple doesn't own the show. They own the streaming rights to the show, but the show is produced by Warner Brothers. Same's true of Monarch.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So once again, we have to address the 900-pound gorilla in the room that is not named Kong. It is named the Paramount Warner Brothers merger, and what happens after that takes place. And do those contracts end? Do they stop producing material for Apple TV and for other outlets and start producing them for whatever the hybrid HBO Max Paramount Plus becomes?
I have to feel like if they were playing this show on HBO, it would be making a bigger cultural impact.
No, possibly. We've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Thank you.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us, and we are going to shift gears now, Jeremy. Move to the other big series that's on right now on streaming, and that being Invincible, which is well into season 4 on Amazon Prime right now. I may be wrong, but it seems like notably longer episodes this season. And I'm really loving this series. I just, with the possible exception of one episode that felt like some filler, they're really just driving forward on the storylines. I really love these characters. The animation is great. Sometimes it's a little extreme, perhaps never more so than in the fifth episode, which is the last that aired at time of recording. What are you thinking overall? How are you liking the series?
Conquest is a menace, dude. Oh my goodness. The way that season 3 and now the halfway point of season 4 have ended have been, like you said, very extreme, which is true to the nature of the show. It's pretty graphic violence. Kind of feels a little like an animated version of The Boys, just superficially, I guess, in tone and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Which The Boys coming back this week as well, by the way.
Can't wait to see the finale of that series.
Yeah.
So we've talked about Invincible each and every season that it's been out so far. And I think I've been generally positive about it throughout, and I still am. But I do feel there is a manicness to these storylines that sometimes I don't know if they're throwaway or if they're going to come back around. And to your point, I felt like the Damien Darkblood episode in this season felt very much like an aside that pulled us out of the main story.
I think that's a fair criticism. I suspect that it is setting something up for the future. I mean, we had that little tag at the end that really felt like it was setting something up for the future. What we've seen so far in Invincible is that nothing is throwaway. Like everything comes back around eventually. You know, we keep the other thing that we keep going back to is this, this like ghost mummy entity that keeps trying to possess people and only wants to possess a male host. And yeah, we saw in this season, he finally just says, there's no male host. I'm just going to possess this female host and gets in the buzz. Like, oh, this isn't so bad. So that they're not just throwing that in there, just throw it in there. It's not just comic relief. There's something coming with that, I'm sure.
Or a minus for me, but well, I do feel like the fact that there's like 4 different storylines happening in each and every episode is really specific to this series, and I can't think of anything else like that.
I mean, it is, I like that kind of level though. I like that there, you know, it feels real. You know, there's not all of your other problems go away because you're dealing with this one problem in the real world.
Yeah. I just like narratively, it's interesting to like, oh, there's an alien invasion happening, but also over here, we're doing battle with this woman who's come in to try to get power source for her planet. And then like, she's gone out of it. And then there's some other invasion that's happening. And I know it's very much what the series is. It's just hard for me to ping pong around so much and keep a straight like investment in what matters, which I think is the Nolan and his son story.
I mean, I can see the notion that maybe the series is a little ADD.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a part of the appeal to it.
Yeah, I do too. I think it is, you know, this is meant to be a superhero series that is more realistic in terms of what the real world implications of superheroes would be, and more realistic in terms of what that type of violence would look like, and is more geared to a more modern sensibility as far as attention span and as far as everything keeping coming at you.
And yeah, I think that you know that everything keeps coming at you.
And I mean, I think that some of that is meant to make you feel what Mark is feeling. You know, we are in the end supposed to identify with Mark. He is our viewpoint character. He is invincible. He's the title character. And, you know, we've seen it this season where he's feeling very much beat down and he's feeling very much the weight of the world on his shoulders. And that's because it never lets up. You know, we had that great scene early on where he gets home from being out trying to take care of the entire world and finally like gets to throw some food in the microwave. And before it's even done cooking, he gets paged again.
Yeah.
So, you know, he is, you know, Earth's mightiest hero, for lack of a better term. And that means the entire weight of the world is on his shoulders, and it always is going to be. And he's got to try to have a life in the pockets in between.
It's really wild how they were able to bring Nolan back, who has been shown to be such a reprehensible, horrible monster, and then also make you feel for him. And even one of the characters even addresses it, Alan does. But it's like you really feel for him in some of the moments. And it's crazy to be able to hold that true, also knowing what he's done.
I think that we wouldn't be able to do that were we to not have the perspective of Alan in particular. Like that, yeah. That character makes a redemption arc for Nolan possible because we get to see Nolan through Alan's eyes. And that changes our view of Nolan. And it starts to change Nolan's view of himself for that matter. Like if it were not for Alan, Nolan probably would have killed himself or allowed himself to be killed by the Viltrumites.
One of the scenes that I thought was really cool is when he went back to talk to the guy that made his costume.
Mm-hmm.
What's that guy's name?
Al.
So when he goes and talks to Al and they have a beer together, and Nolan mentions, you know, maybe you can fix up the costume for me. And he's like, sorry, I can't. I do it for heroes. And it's kind of a moment of pathos, Nolan realizing the way that this old friend of his sees him. But then the minute he leaves, you can just see the relief in Al. Like, he really thought he could have got murdered in that moment.
There have been so many scenes like that in this season. Shout out to Mark Hamill for that. Shout out to J.K. Simmons for the way he's playing Omni-Man. Shout out to Sandra Oh for the amazing voice performances that they're giving in these parts to convey all of that with no physical presence, with just a voice and the way a character is drawn and animated. It's absolutely incredible. I think that if Nolan does have a successful redemption arc, that laying that little seed in there, that little, I only make costumes for heroes, potentially sets up at some point Al making him another costume because he has redeemed himself and he's a hero again. And if they do that, I think that's going to be such a great through line. And I never expected
for a character like that.
Yeah. I mean, I've never expected to, well, I mean, he may have to die. He may have to die saving the Earth. And maybe Al makes a costume for the funeral. But
that's fantastic, man.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm not the writer of the show, but that's where I'd go. If the way that's laid down, that's how I'd, you know, drive it home at the end. That would be the little bow on the entire redemption arc for that character would be.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Al makes a costume for him. I don't know that that's where they're going. I know a fair amount about the Invincible comics, but I haven't read them all, so I don't know where this ends up. I know little bits and pieces here and there, and I kind of don't, as much as I do like the comics, I don't want to read them because of that. And I will say there's a lot of things that have changed from the comics. They're, you know, certainly Debbie's role has been beefed up quite a bit. Eve's role has been beefed up quite a bit. We've had at least two major characters who were male in the comics that have been female in the show, that being Shrinking Ray and Tech Jacket. So
yeah.
And I gotta say, I really enjoyed the introduction of Tech Jacket in this season too. Like I'm digging that character. And if there's any character I could see getting spun off into their own series, that's right now is the one, which she has had, or he in the comics has had his own comic in the comics. Some of the other characters we've seen in here have too. Britt is leading the Guardians of the Globe in this series, and Britt is a character that has had his own series in the comics as well. Don't know as much about him, and I don't feel like they've really revealed enough about that character. Like, that character has very much been a cipher so far. So,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we, but you're right. There are a lot of hanging plot lines going on. We've got this plot line where Monster Girl and Robot are trapped in the other dimension. And, you know, there's a lot going on here. Well, and I have faith that they're going to tie it all up because they've been done a pretty good job of it so far. So, like, that's the other thing. I'm willing to be patient with all these various storylines because the show has done such a good job of bringing them all together in the past.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, they have earned, now well into the fourth season, they have earned the credit to me to give them some more rope. Like, if they had tried...
Are we on a hiatus now for a little bit?
I mean, I'm sure they are. Animation takes some time. But we've got, I think, 3 more episodes this season. It's not... Yeah, there's no break in the season.
I don't know that they're coming out.
I don't think there's a break in the season, but I might be wrong. Okay. I'll have to double check on that. But it seems like there's supposed to be a new episode next week. I certainly hope so, because without spoiling anything, we left off on quite the cliffhanger in this episode. And I do not want to have to wait months to find out how that turns out. But when we do find out it turns out, I'm sure we'll come back to the series at the end of the season. We've got to go for now. Until next week, you're talking to Let's Go. You're watching. Until next week, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.